At his home in Somers in northern Westchester County, Ed Liss has one of the largest collections of a uniquely American invention. 19 jukeboxes, all completely restored and plugged in, line the walls of Ed's rumpus room. Ed's home is filled with machines dating from the 1930s up through the decades. While some appear more modest, others have swirling colored lights and molded cabinets to look like an automobile or a locomotive. And Ed says they all capture the aesthetics of the era in which they were built.
So these represented like a Chrysler. This represented a Chevron. This was a 1960 Chevrolet, the fins curved. The whole machine is designed for its time. The way it looks, the way it sounds, the way it works, and certainly the way it emotionally connects.
Ed, who worked in the computer industry for 46 years, retired from his own business in 2009, and now devotes his time to his jukebox hobby that he's pursued for nearly four decades. What started out as simply searching for equipment to play his records has transformed into a museum of chrome and music.
I started doing this, you know, almost 40 years ago. My friends at the time thought I was nuts. You collect stamps, you collect, you know, cars, but you don't collect jukeboxes. But looking back on it, they kind of saw where I was going with it, although it was my original intent, just how it ended up. This is the Great American Jukebox. This is the Wurlitzer 1015.
It's not long before Ed's tour stops at a kaleidoscopic jukebox with bubble tubes running along its curves.
This is the one I grew up with as a kid, and it was my favorite, and it always will be.
Ed picked up this particular piece in 1975, but it wasn't in the same shape as it is today, tossing swirling oranges, reds, and greens in the jukebox museum. In 2000, Ed sent it away to the Wurlitzer factory in North Tonawanda, New York, for a ground-up restoration. It's now a new 67-year-old jukebox.
Most of the parts I get for these machines or have to fabricate all come from here in the U.S. Jukeboxes were 100% American-made. Period. Before, you know, World War II, and even after World War II, when they started licensing some of them in Europe, these machines pretty much are all made in America. It's a tremendous accomplishment. With the exception of raw materials and maybe speakers, everything that was made by these manufacturers was made in-house.
Ed punches in a selection for a record he says he doesn't play very often.
And the records are worth as much as the jukebox, collectively, because some of these are one of a kind, like this crazy.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.
Ed says this Patsy Cline 78 is one of one left in the world. Like all records, every time it's played, the disc degrades a little more. Ed says if he had a restored Rolls Royce, he wouldn't drive it, but he would gladly drop a nickel into one of his jukeboxes. Listening to the record, he gets a little nostalgic.
These machines were the ultimate multitaskers. They had to do everything. They had to work all the time. They had to keep track of the money, the popularity of the song, accumulate the coins. A lot of things going on simultaneously. And you put your nickel in, you press a number, and you get your music. But the technology they used was complex and reliable. It was great American engineering. When made in America really meant something, really. I never ever get tired hearing that song. I could hear that song all day long.
The first electrically amplified jukebox dates back to a machine developed in 1927 by the Automatic Musical Instruments Company. Now able to fill a room with sound, the machines were the evolution of the nickel-in-the-slot machines designed in the late 19th century. Fondly remembered today alongside burgers and chocolate malts, the Fonz and teenage dances, the jukebox didn't always occupy such a warm place in American memory. In its early days, much of the American public turned up their nose at the jukebox. Associated with African Americans, prejudice surrounded the jukebox.
The Gullah language for dance is jug, so it became juke. Jukebox is a dance box. And it was always associated with blacks and low, you know, it didn't have a good reputation, only because of that. You know, you'd find them in brothels, you'd find them in places of ill repute. So they never got the respect when people thought of jukebox. They always thought of, you know, that kind of stuff. Listen to the quality of sound. Oh, that's not the right one. Sorry. Okay. The only place you can hear black music was in a juke joint that catered to black people. Because they wouldn't play it on the radio. It was undignified. Irony was that white folks loved black music, but they refused to admit it publicly, which was kind of stupid because a lot of those records were made in the heyday of those great artists like Louis Armstrong and Billie Holiday and everyone else under the sun. And so a lot of that was lost to the public because it was just not allowed to play.
Ed's antiques are filled with the music of their eras. This Duke Ellington tune is playing on a prototype 1936 Wurlitzer. It's an incredibly rare machine, but Ed prefers to listen to his music the way it was enjoyed in the time it was recorded.
Humans deal in analog. We speak in analog. We don't talk in zeros and ones. So our physiology, this is true, our physiology is made for music, which is analog. It's just the way it is. It's humanism is analog. So even though the digital may sound different, maybe a little better if you have a noisy 78, you can never ever replace the original. You know, you could say, well, this could sound better. Yeah, but it's not original anymore, is it? It's been modified. So,
with 19 twinkling machines, Ed isn't done with his work, but to show his next project, he needs to take the tour beyond the wood-paneled gallery. After backing the car out of the garage, Ed turns around a wooden box, the shell of a 1937 Rockola. He marvels at the details of the early machine.
This is rosewood with, it's called marquee walnut. It's all done by hand.
He didn't have to go far to find this one. He found it in nearby Katona, and its owner was happy to hand it over.
And the man had it for many years. It didn't work, and he didn't want it, so it was just taking up space. So I said, I'll give you a little money for it, not much. He said, take it. I mean, you know, it's a pile of junk until you get into it. They're all pile of junk, so I can't quite get into it. So.
Hello, baby. Yeah, this is the Big Bopper speaking.
Although he started out more private with his hobby, in recent years, Ed has found the need to share the story of the American jukebox with his community. He's produced his own short film on the machines and has given talks to elementary school students.
So part of what I've done is to try to share that with young people so they really understand where this stuff came from and why. You know, it's not about me, it's about music. But I'm willing now to kind of share it with people, and certainly older people reconnect to it, so they really love it.
For WAMC, I'm Lucas Willard.